Welcome to the Geekcentric Podcast, and welcome to our spoiler-free review for Alex Garland's Civil War. Hello, I'm Jayla, but you can call me Justin. And if you're joining us for the first time, well, we are Geekcentric, a podcast covering the world of movies, TV shows, toys, collectibles, gaming, and all things Geekcentric. Joining me for today's spoiler-free review is my brother-in-arms. He's a soldier in his own right, Mr. Nate Shelton. How are you?
I would not make it as any kind of soldier, bro. Maybe I could like help out with the war effort and like talk to, maybe, you know what? Spokesperson for whatever. Whoever pays me the most, I think, and I maybe morally agree with, I think it's also a good option.
Yeah. I don't think I would do well. I don't think I'd fend well in a civil war.
No.
Look, we have been thinking about this movie for quite a bit.
Talk about it. Yeah.
Yeah, we want to talk about it. So let's get right into it. As I mentioned, today we will be reviewing Alex Garland's Civil War, which is an A24 film. Huge thanks to our friends at Elevation Pictures for inviting us to a press screening, an IMAX press screening.
That was a nice surprise. Yeah.
Awesome.
Which we weren't expecting that.
Absolutely awesome. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. This movie has the shortest and smallest synopsis. Civil War is an adrenaline-fueled thrill ride through a near-future fractured America balanced on the razor's edge.
Whew.
And we will expand on that in so many ways.
Yeah.
This stars Kirsten Dunst, Wagner Moura, Callie Spaney, Stephen McKinley Henderson, Sonoya Mizuno, and Nick Offerman, and Jesse Plemons, which is more of a cameo role, so we can't forget him. This movie is releasing in theaters and in IMAX as of April 12th, so later this week, Friday, if I'm not mistaken, based on the date of recording this. For our discussion, we are going to be talking about three pillars and what worked and what didn't work in each of those pillars, so look and feel, performances and characters. Finally, story and pacing, and then we'll wrap up with our score and any other thoughts. So let's kick it off with look and feel. I'm just going to kind of get the ball rolling here. And I got to say, the look and feel is probably what has stuck with me the most about this movie. It feels very current given its situation, but it also really does transport you to a near future America that's teetering on the edge of collapse, and it's fractured, and you know it's so well captured in the landscapes, and I feel like that those landscapes and that's all that destruction, it just mirrors and tells the story of division tearing the nation apart, and that's just from the visuals. There's given the fact that this is a civil war, an American Civil War story, the politics of it seems to be less. It's these visuals that really drive this warlike film and really make you feel like you're living in it. I think the film's cinematography is so well done. It just captures the devastation in this sort of post-conflict landscape. And you know, we're going to talk about it, I think, a little bit more. But obviously, this is told from a perspective of war photographers and the use of still photos in this film and in the editing process really does provide an insight into the story that is told through journalism and through capturing the truth. And I very much think that, you know, the way they use the sound design, particularly the shutter when it clicks and it freezes a moment, it evokes a burned in memory of war, and it adds so much depth to the visual storytelling overall. I think for me, the hybrid mix of this sort of, I guess, docu-style with very apparent photography elements, it just worked really, really well to create its own tone and vibe. So incredible, incredible work across the board from the cinematography to the sound design to the direction of just how the visuals will tell the story more so than any sort of exposition, because we don't get any exposition really in this. It's just kind of we're thrown into it, right? And there's no explanation as to why this war's happened or why the lines have been drawn in this sort of civil war. So we kind of have to piece it together based on the information that's given to us.
Yeah, I mean, on the note of like the surroundings telling you where you are, I think Alex Garland is so good at storytelling through world building, right? And so there's like a sequence where you see on an overpass, you see ghost stealers, right? And it's like written in spray paint. And it's, you know, it's telling you that, okay, we're in Pittsburgh. And it reminds you of the world that once was, right? The world that celebrated sports and fandom. And then immediately hanging under that bridge is just a stark slap in the face of reality of what these characters are now going through. And it's wild. And it's moments like that throughout this movie with just what we're seeing that just tell you, you're right. It tells you so much. I think Rob Hardy did such a good job with the cinematography in this movie. And I think, you know, what you're seeing on screen is horrific, and you're gonna want to look away, but I just kind of found myself like staring and taking in the emotion. It's so intense. I think the way this movie's shot, you know, for again bringing up the concept of like war photography, it has such a focus on that, and Rob doesn't shy away from highlighting, you know, using different lenses, as well as the way, you know, the camera sort of weaves, you mentioned docu-style, right, alongside the characters in these chaotic moments. It's so brilliant. And I think what is so one of my favorite things, and one of the things that, because you mentioned the cinematography has kind of been something that stays with you, I think in all three of the pillars that we're going to talk about, there's something that stays with me about this movie. But I think it's there's a specific sequence, and I think it's so impressive when a movie can be shot in a way that takes something that would normally be so peaceful and beautiful and fill it with so much dread, right? So for instance, there's a long drawn out shot of our characters. They're just walking away and they keep going and they go off camera, but the camera lingers on like a grassy field, and there's a lovely tree, and there's some birds chirping, and the sky is beautiful and blue. But because I knew, and as an audience, you know what these characters are walking towards.
Yeah, what the dread is.
You get, yeah. It's so incredibly uneasy. And the contrast between what you're seeing and what you're feeling, for a movie to do that in its cinematography, is just so, so good. And it's just something, yeah, it's going to stick with me for sure.
Yeah, I think to add to that too, you know, some of those visuals of serene and peace, it almost is a reminder of what they've lost, what the characters right. have lost, what they're sort of fighting for in a lot of ways. And I loved, like, there's just this super great macro shot of grass, and there's this blue flower, and just, and
yeah,
it's
you
sort
were
of
geeking out as a photographer lover because of the way that the
sure.
lens kind of blurs it out and stuff. Yeah.
And I love your point about the idea of you want to look away.
Yeah.
But you can't, you have to look at this. That's the conflict that our characters go through. That's the conflict mm-hmm. that I think all war photographers will go through, is this idea of they want to look away, but they're capturing truth, telling a story that no one else is telling through mm-hmm. their photography. And you can't look away. You have to embrace that. And, you know, we see that kind of unfold in a variety of ways through our characters. And I think that that's really great. I think that if the movie did that for you as an audience member, it's funny because it's sort of what the intent is of the entire movie, is to really drive home the importance of, you know, journalism and war photography as being this sort of, not an art form, but a sense of truth telling.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, to hear, you know, one character tell another character, like, that's a good photo, but the photo is something so horrific. It's just, it twists your mind a little bit to sort of get into the mindset of these war journalists to sort of say, like, yeah, it's a well-framed photo, or it's a well, you know, done photo, but just what's in the image is so terrifying. But again, that's that balance, right?
Sure. I think though too, like, when I was in university and I was studying photography and you know, in a lot of the theory classes, war photography and journalism photography was something that was talked about, even documentary films. You know, there was a great quote. I know we're talking about photography, but when it comes to documentary films, I can't remember who said it, but they said, the camera is a weapon that shoots at 24 frames a second. And that comparison to the idea of how a camera can be treated as a weapon of capturing truth and honesty and the reality of situations. I think that's why in a lot of instances in this film where we see, you know, Kirsten Dunst's character Lee with Callie's character Jessie, you know, she's acknowledging the good work that she's doing, because those are tough images. Those are tough images to look at, but in those images, the whole story's there.
Yeah.
The reality is there.
Is there. Yeah.
And when someone looks at it, like you said, they can't not, they want to look away, but they're going to look at it and understand the realities of the situation. So yeah, I think in a lot of ways, the film and the topic within the film, or the subtopic within the film, it's they're married really well. And I think that the way we see it on display, apart in one of the many ways, is in the look and feel, is in how we experience this movie.
I want to keep on feel here, specifically with sound. And, you know, we talked about the fact that we were lucky enough to get to see this in IMAX. I think absolutely you need to experience this movie in IMAX. I was not expecting, you know, jump scares in this movie. Like, it's not like a horror movie, right, where something is slowly building in the background and then pops out at you. I was just like, any gunshot that went off in this movie, I was getting jump scares from. And I think the sound in the IMAX theater, it hits you in the chest, and it elevated my heart rate to a place where, honestly, I don't think my heart, listen, I'm working on getting healthier, but I don't think my heart rate came down until like 40 minutes after the movie ended. That's how intense so much of the sound in this movie is. And I also wanted to mention the music by Jeff Barrow, Ben Salisbury. I was getting very, and I even leaned over to you in the theater, Justin, and said, like, Gustavo Santaolalla, who does the guitar for, or does the music for The Last of Us. You get moments of soft guitars plucking away in these very sad sequences of, you know, they're driving past displaced families or through a forest that's caught on fire. And it's just this beautiful sort of heart-wrenching guitar plucking. But I also wanted to bring up, very much like the long drawn out grassy field, we get a needle drop. And I talked about that contrast in the composition of that shot. We get a needle drop from of De La Soul's Say No Go, and it is used so effectively. I won't say what scene it's used in, or you know, kind of describe that scene, but Alex Garland actually, in a Q&A at South by Southwest, which is where this movie was premiered, he said that it's used intentionally to contrast the horrific moment it played over. He said, if you look at one of the greatest war films of all time, Apocalypse Now, you couldn't call it anti-war because it's too seductive. He says, from the beginning shots of napalm over the palm trees dissolving into ceiling fans, it pulls you into a kind of a dark romance. And then he continues to say that the De La Soul track that had had a particular function, which was, it was to be jarring and aggressive and speak to somehow the perverse pleasure in what was happening, but not actually be seductive. And so to use music so effectively to show the adrenaline in a character like Joel Wagner-Mora's character, but then at the same time, like, your stomach is turning because of what you're seeing, and it creates so much lasting power, which is so impressive. And again, I love the whole concept with sort of that visual contrast. We get that in the audio and in the music as well. And it just sort of, you're just sort of sitting there and just like, you can't fathom how someone is getting adrenaline rush or pleasure out of what's going on. And it just works so well. It's so good.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. You know, I think the thing about the music that really stood out is, you know, you're right. It very much reminded me of Gustavo's music from The Last of Us. And there's an quality to using an acoustic guitar in that way that kind of speaks to the simplicity, the sort of distilling it down to the rawness, which I think is why it's a mechanism used in these, like, quote unquote,
apocalyptic
style films.
Sure,
It's just to keep it really raw and to the bone. And I think that it's used really effectively here. I know we've already kind of moved away from cinematography, but I did do a little bit of digging on this. And what was interesting about the cinematography, again, at South by Southwest, Alex Garland actually talked about it, but they didn't just use traditional film cameras on tracks and dollies. They actually used a camera called the Ronin 4D. It's a larger camera, but then the lens is on a gimbal. So it tracks and it moves, and it has more of that steady cam, that docu style where it feels like it's just lingering and, mm-hmm. and moving with the actors. And, you know, he comments on it by saying, you know, all the work I've done previously was shot very traditionally off tracks and on dollies and very carefully framed. And that wasn't right for this because the emphasis was all about reality, which pushes you towards sort of shaky cam handheld. But at times we wanted more control than just having a shaky cam. So they ended up using the extraordinary camera called the 4D, DJI Ronin. And the cameras are they're good cameras. Like they're only $5,000, right? Like you can go and buy them. They're not.
Wow.
You know, so to think that, you know, going back to last year with the creator using the FX3, yeah. the Sony FX3, which is a prosumer level camera to do the level of storytelling. And here we have Alex Garland working with Rob Hardy to tell this story, which is, I think, A24's biggest budgeted film. Like
it was 50 million budget.
Yeah,
USD?
It's huge. Yeah, it's massive. Yeah. Yeah, like the idea of what they can achieve with cameras that aren't necessarily $80,000, you know, once they're rigged out with lenses and stuff like that. I think that just goes to show the level of storytelling that we're getting now with the cameras that are available. It's mm-hmm. not necessarily just about being clean and pristine and cinematic. There's other means that really work to elevate the storytelling that give it that cinematic level. Mm-hmm. And these are small cameras to really kind of make you feel like you're in it. And it worked. It really, really worked well in terms of putting you in these raw moments. And, you know, with all the great look and feel, we have some outstanding performances. The whole cast really does deliver. But for me, I know we'll probably chew on this for a bit, but Kirsten Dunst is definitely a standout. I think she delivers a haunting portrayal of a war-torn photographer whose character is broken. And that very much echoes in the scars of conflict that she wears and that she's seeing around her as well. Mm-hmm. But with that, just sort of juxtaposing with that is Kaylee Spaney's performance as a young, eager, hungry photographer that gives Kirsten Dunst's character Lee reflection and a moment of understanding and sort of understanding where she was at one point. There's just such a beauty between these two characters and their performances and the way we see them have very sincere and honest moments with one another that really does reflect not a mother-daughter, but more of a mentee mentality and really gives Jesse perspective on understanding the truths of war, right? Because she's portraying innocence in a lot of ways. And mm-hmm. I think her hunger for truth is amidst the harsh realities of war. I thought it was really well done.
Yeah, this whole cast just draws you into this world that is so terrifying because, we've been talking about, like, it could be a reality sooner than I think anyone would like to imagine, but there wasn't a single frame from any member of this cast that ever took me out. I think from the very first instance that a character speaks all the way to the final frame, you're in the middle of these horrifying moments and has so much to do with their performances. But yeah, Kirsten Dunst is stellar in this. She's rugged. She's seen so much by the time we meet her in the movie. And the first thing I actually wrote down in my notes was she's safe behind her lens until she isn't. And I think the way that she's able to portray the arc of Lee Miller is just like unlike anything that I've seen from her before. I think this might be her strongest performance yet. She is fantastic in The Power of the Dog. But here she's so stoic. She's relentless and she has to be in order to do her job like we were talking about. And it's a job that's so unforgiving. But then, yeah, Kaylee's character, you know, I think Lee is at the more mature stage of her career, whereas Jesse we have is at the beginning, and she's brilliant in this movie. I think the way that the way that Kaylee portrays the hopefulness of Jesse and then the terror that she experiences and her growth throughout, it's so mm-hmm. captivating because it is you in this movie. You are her. Like if we mm-hmm. always talk about like who's the vessel. I really do think
Jesse's
the vessel, and mm-hmm. and you want to root for her, but then at the same time I found myself constantly praying that she just stop taking the risks that she takes throughout this movie. And I think it gets to a certain point where you start to trust her a little more. And then you get to that place within the span of a single film, which is not easy. I don't think, like, it's not easy to sort of give you that entire motion of a character that you so desperately are like, you're so new, I just don't want you to go into this at all, to a place where you start to trust her. You start to sort of be a little more okay with the things she's doing. And she nails it. She is just excellent. Both of them are excellent.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think honorable mentions, though, too. You know, again, like you said, everyone on screen had a purpose, and they delivered.
Yeah,
with honesty and sincerity. I think Wagner Moura was very compelling, very very natural, very emotional. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think he represents a high strung journalist.
Sure, yeah,
who understands the stress, but also appreciates covering the story and being the ones there to capture it. And you see that represented so well in his character. And I actually really enjoyed him. And he reminds me, I'm pretty sure he was in Narcos at some point.
He was, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yep. He reminds me, like, he could be Pedro Pascal's brother. Like, his face looked like Pedro Pascal.
And
at times,
it doesn't help that his name is Joel.
Yeah.
In The Last of Us, Pedro's character is named Joel. But no, I think Joel in this movie is kind of like the middle ground between Lee and Jesse at various points. Like, we see him, he shows every emotion that both Lee and Jesse push away at different points in time, right? Yeah. And so he lets himself go at go to those more extreme places. He'll drink, he'll laugh, he'll feel the rush of danger. And, you know, I think that's something that Jesse learns from him. But then at the same time, he embraces Jesse and Sammy, Stephen McKinley Henderson's character, because he sees that they long for the life that he and Lee have so desperately, or they don't want to give it up.
On opposite ends, right?
Yes, like, no, you know, exactly.
Stephen McKinley Henderson is definitely the wise one,
who
knows that he doesn't have much time left to do this kind of work and to do this kind of coverage. Therefore, he's tagging along to experience what he can, while he still can. And then you have obviously Jesse, who is new to it all. So there's a really great juxtaposition and duality between those two characters, and I really did like Stephen McKinley Henderson's character. I think he was wisdom. He's
the warmth of this movie.
He's the kindness.
It doesn't have a lot of smiling, but like, he brings the majority of the moments where I was smiling.
He just sees through the bullshit. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he many times called out Lee for her, you know, behaviors, and recognized it. So I think in a lot of ways, much like, you know, they are seeking the truth through their and telling their story through the war photography, he is calling them out on their truths as well.
But I love that he is kind of both the most mature one of the group, and technically he's very immature in the sense of and not in no shade to Sammy, because I feel like if I was at a point in my career that he was at, I would want to be just as involved as well. But there is something, you know, a little selfish about wanting to go along with these people, and because you might be a bit of a liability, right? And he talks about that, and
he
calls him out on that.
Yeah, he
right.
doesn't want to miss out.
And that's completely fair. But I love that sort of juxtaposition of a character. Yeah, of a character that can recognize the FOMO that he's having, but doesn't care. He's like, I really want to be a part of this. And the fact that you're right, like, he teaches Lee new lessons, even though she's so far, you know, gone.
Yeah, she's just gone
by the time we start this movie. And so, yeah, I think I loved Sammy. That's so much to do with Steven's performance. He's a really lovely guy. Nick Offerman is in this movie as the president of the United States. We don't get a ton of him, but what we do get of him is
eerie.
Great. I think
it's very eerie. He's very it's like sort of Trumpian, but it's not at the same time. Like,
over the radio throughout the movie, you kind of hear like, you know, everyone's going to be okay. It's going to be okay because we're America, kind of like that shtick. And I love hearing his voice, but in this movie, whenever it would pop up, I'd just be like annoyed.
Well, he has a voice his voice is definitely perpetuating propaganda. That's, you know, saying like, yeah, we're doing well, we're winning, we're in it, you know, and I guess a lot of it has to do with just understanding perception versus reality, right? Mm-hmm. And that's sort of, you know, a very underlined theme within this movie is that duality of understanding that. He was fine. I think Jesse Plemons, though.
Let's talk about Jesse Plemons.
Jesse Plemons was vile. He was so evil. His scene is really more of a cameo. And he's not even like, we see Nick Offerman more than we see him, but his scene is sort of it's a very pivotal moment because it really actually touches on, I think it tells you more about what's going on in this war and what this division is more than anything else that happens before it or after that scene. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why it's sort of the moment that people will talk about in this movie.
Yeah.
And you can't have anyone better than Jesse Plemons. Like the guy he just knows how to commit.
He makes such an impact while he's on screen. And I think the scariest part about his performance is that like there are so many people in the world who share his ideology who would thrive in an America like the one we see in this movie. And I think, you know, seeing him, you just kind of get shivers up your spine. He's so effective in this film. And I think to me, he gives one of the most like memorable drawn out sequences in the movie because of how captivating he is. And yeah, man, like just even down to like, we talk about memorable, the costume design in some of these people, like just the idea of having those like bright, like pink red glasses that he wears. And it's just like, and also the fact that he is wearing sort of military garb, but at the same time,
yes,
there's no particular, you know, group that it looks like he is with, you yeah. know what I mean? Like he just believes in America, but at the same time, you know, which America,
but that's design
believing yes. in. Right.
And that is done by design in my
yeah.
opinion.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the story and the pacing of this film, because that's a really great launching pad. Because what's interesting about this story, you know, Garland he's a masterful storyteller. He knows how to weave a narrative that'll keep viewers engaged from start to finish. And what's really interesting about this is that it's grounded in the people. It's not mm-hmm. grounded in the conflict. So mm-hmm. there's no bias. And recently there was a post on Instagram, I think someone posted a reel, where they asked him the question about the politics of it. And he explains, you know, the background around the politics, but he says that it was important to not litter this movie with a biased nature. It was really about having an unbiased nature. And that is a war photographer's job, is to not have one side or the other, but to be the line in between that is telling this story, regardless of which side you believe. And I think the film does such a great job of not necessarily, again, giving us expositional information to explain how we got to where we are in this movie. Mm-hmm. It just shows you what's happened. Yep. And it's less of the point. It's more of the stage.
Yeah.
The people that are in this world, they're the importance. You know, when we talk about pacing, I really do think the road trip style pacing of this film allows for a bit more of a dynamic storytelling, because you have those very traditional moments in a road trip that are, you know, high energy, maybe a little more reflective, go into high energy or action or something along those lines. And then, you know, it goes back and forth. It's just a ballet. And I think that worked to this film's advantage. I think putting a road trip style spin on this will really actually worked. And I think it's great to see the characters traverse through this sort of fractured America along the way and, you know, grappling with the consequences of the actions while also understanding the moral complexities of war. You know, the themes of societal fracture and morality and the price of freedom are I think thoughtfully explored in this story. And I think that's what it makes it so relevant.
Yeah.
And so poignant, given where we are right now in the world. And I think it's going to leave audiences with a lingering question about, you know, power and sacrifice. I honestly, like there's such a dialogue that this movie has in those two worlds and understanding, you know, the idea of sides,
Yeah.
And honestly, I don't think either side in this film is right or wrong. Do you know what I mean? Like, because I don't fully understand, but at the same time, I think that's by design again, right?
Yeah.
To not.
Yeah, the movie, you know, sort of puts you, it starts off right in the middle of this conflict, right? Civil war is broken out across America, and the movie doesn't ease you in. Like, it's shocking how quickly we get to violence, but in a very scary way that itself is reality, right? Like, some of the most, unfortunately, the most terrible and violent moments in human history seem to sort of just happen for almost everyone involved, like on a random Tuesday, right? It just comes quickly and without remorse. And I think this movie, the idea of a road trip, right, where we're seeing this team of press just do their job to the best of their ability while working through all those emotions that you'd expect from them, but all in their own ways. The writing is so good because you connect with Lee, you connect with Sammy. We talked about Jesse being the vessel, but you really do connect with all these characters. You connect with Joel at different times, right? And I think the ability that Alex has to write these characters in a way that lets you as the audience match their emotion is just done in a way where, like, by the end of this movie, I cared so much about all of them. And the movie doesn't slow down, right? Like, talking about pacing, like, even when it does stray away from the action, so to speak, there is always a reminder in the background of some of the more quiet scenes that terrible things are going on and are coming towards you. And so, you know, even though there's like a couple smiles here and there or once or twice in the movie, it's not afraid to remind you that, like, you're still not safe. These characters are still not safe. Mm-hmm. The world is still not safe.
And America
sure. Yeah, there is a bit of a joke about how well Canada's doing, which was nice to hear as Canadians watching this movie sort of from the outside looking in. But you're right. Like, the movie doesn't pick sides. Like, it does exactly what the main characters are, you know, attempting to do. And I think at times it overwhelmingly shows you the terrible things that are happening. And it lets you decide what to make of it. And I think it's so neutral, in fact, that, like, we don't really even know what caused the US to get to where it is, right? Like, outside of what you could imagine would cause the country to collapse, it doesn't ever really highlight how it got to that point.
Exactly.
And so I think, to the concept of, like, using the world building through what we're seeing and the some of the dialogue, the fact that the whole movie, like you were saying, just mirrors the beliefs of the war journalists that we're seeing on screen is phenomenal. And it's just, again, it's such a smart way to do this. And so
it's written and directed with intention, and it never strays from that intention, right? It doesn't lose itself in the sort of grandeur of how America became fractured and, you know, divided. And it wasn't worried about that. It just wanted to tell the story about the photographers and more importantly, the characters that are dealing with the blowback of all of this and how they're capturing it. And the sort of, I guess I keep saying it, but the truth that they're telling in their photography. And that's very much what war photography is about in a lot of ways. So, well, listen, we've talked about this movie. We've had glowing reviews. I don't think either one of us had actually.
I don't think we said anything that we didn't enjoy about this
that
movie.
Didn't work or that we didn't like about it.
Yeah, I can't think of anything.
So, with that said, I think we should wrap this up with our final score, which we are going to be rating on a scale of 1 to 5 rolls of film.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, there is a film development moment, let's just say, in this movie that Justin was like in our press screening, he was the loudest person. You think you're in a Marvel movie and like Spider-Man just came on screen. He was like so stoked about this, and I love that. I love that for you. I thought that was a lovely that moment made me smile. But I really enjoy the movies that Alex Garland directs and the world building he creates. He's able to craft some sequences in his movies that are, for me, like, unforgettable. I think back to the dancing in Ex Machina, or the bear sequence in Annihilation is incredible. The use of audio there is unreal. And with Civil War, there are just so many of those moments that are incredibly terrifying. The way that they'll just be burned into your memory. And I, you know, the movie isn't pointing towards either side of the political spectrum, but it does paint the horrors of war and you know, what it can do to a country and its people in a time where our world right now, we have so many people suffering from injustice and unjustified violence. And if anything, I think this movie pulls you out of that safety that you might be blessed to be living in. I know that certainly happened for me watching this movie, and it's incredibly intense. It's going to leave you with a heavy heart for what you just went through. And these journalists are just so dynamic and so human. The performances from this cast are just unreal. And the use of sound and music, like we talked about, alongside the editing, the editing in this movie is so good. And yeah, it's just, I think it's the blend of all those things is just unlike anything I've ever seen in a movie like this. You won't forget the first time you watch Civil War. It's a masterclass of a film, and it's certainly one of the best of the year. I think come awards season, we're going to see quite a bit. I'm hoping, and it's a terrifyingly possible docudrama from a future I hope never comes to light. So I'm giving Civil War five rolls of film out of five.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. I think that, you know, Garland knows how to tell stories. This is a masterclass of storytelling, visual storytelling, letting images speak more than words. Mm-hmm. I think it's incredibly gripping. It's incredibly relevant and poignant. It's frighteningly real to a degree. I think, to your point, I hope that this would open people's eyes to understanding just how close something like this could happen in the U.S. Much of the world is, like you said, is going through injustice, unnecessary war, people are suffering. But I think based on what people have seen and the sort of divide and the scariness of what happens in the United States, this is a very possible reality that we would love to never see. That said, you know, again, this movie, it entertains in a way that is thought-provoking. It's mm-hmm. it's about the introspective. It's about the idea of understanding, as you mentioned, your own safety, your own complacency, understanding the world you live in, and whatnot. And this is all done through compelling visuals, outstanding performances from the cast, and just a really thought-provoking narrative that, again, spends less time focusing on the politics and more about the dichotomy of picking a side and what that looks like through the lens of war photographers and the raw reality of what war would look like and how it has that effect. And I think, you know, again, just like any of his movies, Alex Garland has delivered a cinematic experience that is both thrilling and deeply resonating. So I'm with you. I'm giving this one a 5 out of 5 rolls of film. I think it's going to be talked about. I think the only people that really aren't going to like this film are Americans.
We're not talking about everyone in America,
no,
but a very specific group of people that will talk about this movie very loudly on Twitter in maybe ways that they don't give it 5 out of 5rolls of film.
Yeah, and that's, you know, if that's not your cup of tea, then it's not your cup of tea. So
yeah.
Well, that's it for our spoiler-free review for Alex Garland's Civil War. We hope you enjoyed this review. And if you did, feel free to leave us a 5-star review. You know, that goes a long way. Hopefully, if you're American, you'll still leave us a 5-star review. So apologies if you're a little offended. But listen, that is just the reality of it all. If you want, you can let us know how you feel. You can reach out to us at wearegeekcentric@gmail.com. That's wearegeekcentric@gmail.com. Or you can reach out to us on X, as Nate mentioned, or formerly known as Twitter at GeekCentricYT, or on Instagram at WeAreGeekCentric. Again, a huge thanks to our friends at Elevation Pictures for inviting us out for this press screening. Go see this movie in IMAX. It will not disappoint. The cinematography is just absolutely beautiful.
IMAX.
The fact that they actually shot this on a DJI Ronin 4D is pretty wild. So yeah, they got great picture quality out of it. Keep in mind, though, we have a ton of other great episodes covering the latest movies and TV shows, such as our spoiler-free review for Monkey Man, as well as our Watch Club, our ongoing Watch Club for Star Wars The Bad Batch, our latest episode for season 3. Episodes 10 or 11 are out now. We also have a ton of great interviews out now for you to enjoy, both on podcast feeds and on youtube.com/geekcentric. We have my latest interview with executive producer Simon Kinberg of Apple TV Plus's latest series, Sugar. We also got an interview with the cast of Renegade Nell. Nate sat down with them and they gave him some great style tips. And hey, if you want to see cutdowns of our interviews, you can go to our Instagram at We Are Geekcentric, as I mentioned before, or our TikTok, which is also at We Are Geekcentric. You can find all those little social cutdowns because, you know, all the cool kids use TikTok and Reels now, right? Like, who's listening to podcasts, right?
You know, you just bro,
get the highlights.
Whoa, this social. Is over 30 seconds? Oh my gosh, I don't have time for this. But if you're still listening and you do, thank you.
Yeah, we appreciate you being here, enjoying our reviews. Of course, we have a lot more for the month of April and May coming up. So be sure to subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts. But until then, Nate, thank you for joining me for this spoiler-free review. And as we say,
love ya.
Peace.